This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. It's coming up on bow season. I'm trying to live a life. I'm trying to run trail cameras, trying to get stands set up. And let me tell you something, it is hectic. That's where the Wise Eye Sail Cam comes in handy from Wise Eye Technology. Guys, this camera is the most innovative camera on the market right now. What the camera will do is it will take a picture of deer and text it to you just like any other sail cam does. But what it also does is it sends a system called Hunt Control, the GPS location of where that picture was taken. Hunt Control then looks at the weather, looks at the lunar phase, looks at the wind, looks at everything, and breaks down when this deer was moving and why. Also, if you have multiple Wise Eye cameras in the field and this particular deer you're after walks past those Wise Eyes, they will take a picture of it, put it in a file folder that all the cameras keep up with. Now you have a folder specifically for that deer. That's right. This camera can pick out the deer that you're targeting. It's got a facial recognition system that it recognizes these deer and charts them. Takes out all the legwork that you have to do, simplifies it, tells you when they're moving, so that gives you the best opportunity to get on top of that target animal. They can be found at hogfathers.com and on amazon.com. They can also be bought in person at K&M Coffee Corks and Camo in the great town of Farmerville, Louisiana, out there on the highway going over on Lake Darby on Highway 33. So go check them out. Wise Eye Trail Cams. You got to check them out. They are impressive. Well, I finally got a guest to come on. Had a lot of scheduling conflicts with a couple people to get you a quality podcast before the opening day of bow season, but I finally, called in a favor to my buddy Dan Bruce. He's a shelter insurance agent over in Ruston, Louisiana. I've known Dan my whole life, and he's a good guy, and he's even better bow hunter. Dan is one of those guys who pays attention to the details. He knows what he's doing when he goes in the woods. He's targeted specific animals. And early season, he used to be one of the best at getting on mature deer quickly. I don't think he's quite as intense. In fact, he told me, he said, Greg, I don't really get after them as hard as I used to early season anymore. And that comes with age. We'll talk about that in the podcast. But, it's always good when you can talk about how things have gone and what worked and what didn't work for anybody. I don't particularly care for too many tactics and strategies. That's not what I want this podcast to be about. But in this instance, we're going to be telling stories of the tactics and the strategies, what he's used, and how it would help him be successful. So I hope you guys enjoy. Dan Proust, man, I appreciate you coming on this evening. I know time is kind of of the essence a little bit. Everybody's crammed for time right here before bow season. But, man, I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today.
Hey, man, you bet. Glad to do it. Always like to talk hunting.
Yeah, I know, man. It's something when I see you and a couple more guys, we hit real briefly on how everybody in the family's doing, and then we get into hunting. Right, what are you hunting?
That's
what are
right.
you after? So, now, Dan, tell us about your background. Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Farmerville. Been around Union Parish pretty much my whole life, and I did go to Wichita Christian in Monroe, and then ended up going to Louisiana Tech and have a business there in Ruston now, but work all over this north part of Louisiana basically.
Yeah, you have a shelter insurance place, don't you?
That's right. Sure do. I've been doing that for 17 years now, which is pretty hard to believe for me.
Golly, it's been that long. Just 17 years, man. We're getting old, man.
It has. It'll actually be October the 10th. We'll be 17
wow.
years, yep.
Man, it just seems like the other day you were playing ball at Louisiana Tech, and 17 years you've been doing this. Good land.
It flies by. It's a little bit scary.
Now the Proust family. Now, if you know anything about Union Parish, you know you've probably seen in the last 10 years, Mr. John's deer that just we knew was big, but we didn't know exactly how big until it actually got a tape on it, and it's one of the biggest ever killed in the parish. I can't remember where it ranks in the state, but you guys been hunting for a long one. Yeah, you better know it is. Looks like a rib mm-hmm. cage on top of that thing's head. Yep. It's got 14 points, doesn't it?
Man, off the top of my head, I was thinking it was 15.
It may be 15.
But I may be wrong.
It's something like that. I mean, it is it is something. But your family has been hunting up in this area for generations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where
all do y'all hunt?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, basically Union Parish is where we all hunt growing up. You know, whenever I was younger, I guess just a kid, and then through my high school years, we hunted an Arkla Hunting Club, which was actually, of course I said Union Parish, that's not Union Parish, that's in Union County, but that was a place where most of my family hung out during the fall as far as going deer hunting, and we had a blast up there. But then, you know, just time changes things and things change, and all that time I also hunted here in Union Parish, mainly over towards Shiloh and some other areas. But yeah, been around here hunting in this area for quite a while, and I guess my dad and his brothers, they, you know, that was just kind of part of life growing up. That's what we did on the weekends, and just always enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now let me ask you something. You mentioned Shiloh, and we've had the buck contest now in Union Parish for several years, and it never fails, Dan. That Shiloh Bernice area is going to bring quality animals year in and year out. What is it about the Shiloh area that you think helps grow deer to the size that they become up here?
Man, I don't know. You're right, though. That's some good ground over there, and really there, and then going back up towards what I call the Corny Bottom. I mean, there's some big old bucks every year come out through that area, and if they get some age on them, man, they can really do something. A lot of people are starting to realize that. There's, I don't know if it's just genetics or, you know, something in the soil. I don't know, but yeah, there's some really good deer, always quality deer that come out from that area.
You know, one of my theories is there's more company land on the east side of the parish, I believe, than mm-hmm. it is in that Shiloh Bernice area. And I've always thought that has something to do with, you know, the timber management practice versus, you know, people who have agriculture, because there's a lot of chicken houses, a lot of farms up in that area. And
True. I've
always thought that, and of course that Corny Bottom is, like you just said, is got to be rich in nutrients in that soil, because there have been some impressive animals come out. Daniel Colvin, the Colvins you're going to get on deer every year that are going to be talked about, but that area is really, really rich.
Oh man, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I've hunted, you know, I guess more recently, you know, the east of there and north of there, but there's quality deer there too if they get some age on them.
That's exactly
we're
right.
We're very fortunate to have the quantity and the quality, really, for the deer we have here.
We do have some good grounds. You know, I hear guys on other podcasts, you know, and they're talking about bedding. They'll be like, man, you know, you got to get in there bedding. And I'm sitting there looking around. I'm like, man, this whole flipping parish is nothing but bedding. You know, it's thick.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Good for them. You know, and in the right setting, there's plenty of food. You know, I know sometimes the guys that are growing timber, they're not growing deer, and they're trying to make the trees grow. But you know, you give them an opportunity to find something to eat, deer's going to eat it.
Oh man, you betcha.
And then,
they're controlled by their stomach.
Yeah.
They're going for food.
And and then, like you said, you let them get a little age, and there's, you know, the limits are There's not going to be any because we don't see deer around here that's going to get 6-7 years old. You know, if we can get a 4, 4.5, 5 year old deer, that's an old deer for Union Parish. Because
that's right.
We got there. This is a hot spot for people to come up and hunt. And, you know, we got hunters all over the place. And, you know, I like to say this, Dan, if it makes you happy, take it. If it makes, that's if right. it really makes you happy, that's all that matters. You know, if people want, you know,
that's right.
management. And if I've always encouraged people, if you don't like the management and where you are, go find somewhere else that manages or go buy you a spot of land if you can, you know, manage that's it right. the way you want to. But, you know, at the end of the day, if it's legal, man, I say lay it down. If that truly makes you happy.
That's right.
Yep. Now, the reason I wanted to bring you on, my brother, is because of all the people that I know, you have had the most success locally bow hunting, getting on matured bucks locally. And I want to, you know, kind of pick your brain. You know, you told me when I asked you to do this, you're like, well, I ain't quite as mad at them like I used to be anymore. And I guess as we age, we kind of get into that, you know, the evolution of the hunter. But I think we're both at the stage now. I know you've got your nephews that you like to take. And, you know, I got my kids I like to take. If I go hunting and I don't kill anything, I'm happy. You know, it's got time that's in right. the woods. But, you know, there was a time, like you said, probably about 10, 15 years ago, partner, that this time of the year stands are, I mean, it's just go time, you know.
That's right.
Not quite as bad. So, yeah. Dan, I want to ask you, the first deer that you took with your bow. Well, first off, let's say this. How long have you been bow hunting?
Let's see. I started bow hunting in 2003.
And how, what sure did you? Did. What did Mr. Mark get you in on that?
Yeah, it had a lot to do with it.
He had a lot to do with me picking it back up too, man. That was about the time I had kind of wandered off a little bit from archery, and Mark Proust, you know, he was right there with us, and I, you know, Justin, we all were hanging out, and I think he got Justin a bow, and then I was kind of like, I like that, and then. You know, everybody kind of started getting in on it. So, you know, thank you, Mr. Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's something, you know, I was there at the end of college and always, you know, baseball and all that was kind of ending for me. And I had some extra time. And that same year I took up, that was the first year I turkey hunted as well. And of course I was hooked on that, but I got into the bow hunting that fall. And, it had always piqued my interest for sure. And just hearing people talk about, man, there's nothing like it. And so I gave it a shot that year, and it was a learning experience, but I enjoyed every bit of it. You know, I still learn every time I go, but, that's when I started.
I think if somebody has success early in their bow hunting career, I guess you could say, it's almost detrimental because then you expect it to be easy. And it's not. It's the most humbling experience. And then if you pick up a traditional bow, it's even worse. But, you know, sometimes hunters and people, I guess, in general, are just glutton for punishment. And we'll sit there and watch deer at, you know, ranges that we can't shoot at and just be as content as if we had one right there on top of us.
You betcha. I remember the first deer I killed with my bow was in 2003. And I think, if I remember right, I think it's the first time I went, it was like right there at the beginning of, right here at about this time, you know, the first week of October. And I'd rigged me up a spot and you know, was all excited about it. And I had a kind of what we call maiden doe, kind of a 3/4 grown doe, not a yearling, but a good, you know, the kind of good eating size, you know. Mm-hmm. And she was real leery, and she finally made her way in there. And of course, you know, my heart's up in my throat, and I've hunted all my life, but not like close quarters like that. And I just remember trying to think about drawing, and I'm shaking so much, my arrow falls off my wrist, and then it's hitting my wrist, and you know, all that went on, and she kind of heard me and she took off, but then she eased back in there later on and I got her, but I was hooked. I just couldn't believe how cool that was, just to have them that close and just, man, just like letting loose with that, that air and it just zinging through that. I guess I was hooked from then on it.
Yeah, to hear that thump and you know, bow hunters know what I'm talking about. When you hear that thump, you know, it's like when a good crappie hits, you know, that good thump that people love when they're crappie fishing. That's what we like to hear when we're shooting at a deer. When you're archery, you want to hear that. It's hard to mimic. You can't, you know, unless you're out there, but man, it's just, yeah. And then the deer just takes off. And in my opinion, I feel like sometimes they expire quicker with a bow than they do with a rifle, you know, with the right shot.
I agree. Yep. And it seems like, you know, I love to rifle hunt as well. But it does, I don't know. There's kind of a purer form of hunting, you know, and you're not, you know, you can shoot and you're not really disturbing the woods, and it's just something about it. It's special.
Yeah, it is. And it's just, it is, you said it, it is something special. And if you've never experienced it, we are encouraging you to try it. You know, it's something that, you know, I've got a lot of young people that'll ask me about bow hunting. My uncle's, his wife, you know, he married her. She's from Mexico. She's not a deer hunter. You know, she's been seeing us shoot, and now she wants to shoot in the backyard, you know, just, and she doesn't want to go hunting. Yeah. She just wants to shoot. And I'm like, come on, let's get it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It's a great sport for sure.
It is. Now let's talk about the first big deer that you shot with your bow. Now I'm talking about big deer. I'm talking about one that you're like, yeah, that's quality deer. Which one was that, Dan?
Yeah. So let's see, my second year bow hunt is when I killed a really, really nice mature 10 point. And, I just give you a rundown on it. I was hunting an area that, and this is back in 04, you know, some people had cameras, but a lot of people didn't. And I did not have any at that time. And, so I'm just going off a deer sign, and I got me a good spot, put a lot of thought into the spot. And anyway, I get settled in, and it's the first day I went that season. And if I remember right, it was October the 3rd. And yeah, it was one of those days. It was, I think the high that day was like 95, something like that, mid 90s.
Good North Louisiana weather.
Oh man, I'm telling you. And it got in the evening, it just got that dead steel. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
I mean, it's like, and you feel like you could hear a pin drop. You know, it's just, you know, it's kind of eerie feeling, just, it was hot. But anyway, man, it was one of those deals, like so many times early season. I heard, you know, hear limb pop. It's probably, I guess it was probably 6:15, 6:30, somewhere in there. And, you know, I can tell it's a deer coming. So I go ahead and stand up. I'm hunting out of a lock on, and I see, and it's a spike buck, and he's coming in there. Of course, I'm feeding corn. And it's coming, and I'm like, okay, this is good. Of course, I wasn't going to shoot the spike, but then I could tell it kind of looked back, and I was kind of new to all this about the bucks, you know, at that time, you know, how they really travel together this time of year. And, so I look and I can see, you know, legs coming through the woods. I said, man, okay, here we go. And it was also I caught view of it, and, they were coming right out of the west, and like I said, there was hardly any wind at all. So I was concerned about making noise or them smelling me. And anyway, it was a real good 8-point, and I was excited. And I said, man, if I can just get a shot at him. And it comes in there and comes right in there to the corn, and he's kind of faced me. And then about that time, I heard another limb pop, and I looked. And I said, man, that's a bigger deer. I'm looking back in that direction. And then all of a sudden I see this one, and I was like, and he was real leery. He stayed back, you know, behind the other two. And the whole time I'm looking at that 8-point, I'm like, man, that'd be a great buck. You know, he wasn't a monster, but he was a really good 8-point. Mm-hmm. And then the decision was, well, I sure want to make sure I get one of them. And, cause that the 10 point was hanging back there. And, finally I decided the 10 point kind of kept coming around, and I said, all right, I'm all in on him. I just got to get him because I saw how good he was. And of course, I don't know exactly how long it was, but he was leery. It seemed like it was 5 minutes before he ever got around and presented a shot, but he wouldn't. He kind of hung back there, and he finally got up to where there was a, I'll never forget, you could see it. There was a few kernels of corn right there in front of him. He hadn't got to the corn yet, but he finally eased down. He picked up one piece of corn, and I said, and it just relaxed him. And he eased on around to my right, and anyway, I finally got a shot off, and I got, first thing, I got drawn without any of them seeing me. That's
impressive.
That's the main thing. Once you do that, you know,
it's all over.
That's a lot of the battles over. And then it's just a matter of making a decent shot. And I shot him, and he wheeled around. When he wheeled, I noticed it concerned me big time, but my arrow did not penetrate very far in him. And me being still a young bow hunter, not knowing a whole lot, I was really concerned. And he spun and he took off, and I lost view of him. And, you know, I felt like the placement was good, but I was just worried about the penetration. But I kept listening, and I thought I heard something. And then maybe 5 minutes went by after he'd taken off, and I thought I heard kind of like almost like a deep breath, or and maybe a little bit of a, like a gurgle, really.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that, but it was like, did I really hear that? And anyway, I let time pass, and of course I called my dad and didn't get him. I actually left him a voicemail, and we had fun with that later, because he doesn't have any more, but we played it back. It was just really, really funny listening to me talk, being that excited. But ended up, got down and went, didn't find any blood, nothing. And actually, I just went back to where he was standing. And I said, I'm going to go right to, I remembered hearing that noise. I'm going to go right to where I think I heard it. And I went right there 50 yards, and there he was.
Oh, hey.
It was him. Yep. I didn't see, and it had got down in him, you know, good enough. And he'd expired right there. So that was, I was excited. Let me tell you, that was
you
actually
were.
That was my first buck with my bow.
Wow.
So that, I started off right.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, how big was he?
He was actually, I never had him officially scored, but I took him to, I think, Simmons and TP at the time, but he was right at 135, I believe, but he actually had one of his legs, I don't know, never really will know if it was from being shot before or hanging his kind of the elbow of his front leg in a fence, or, but he had some sort of injury and it had healed back. You know, it had been a while back, but he had a little bit. That's another thing I didn't mention. He had just a little bit of a limp, but I didn't really pay attention to that a whole lot. You know, I was focused in on trying to kill him, but he was healthy as could be. I mean, that was back then. I really didn't weigh him or anything, but he was, you know, he was a mature, I would say, looking back, he was at least 4.5 and probably a 5.5 is what I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, he was like 135, but he had, back to what I was saying about one of his front legs, it caused the one side of his rack, his actually left side of his rack, was kind of had some deformity to it, which makes it look cool. He's got like a sticker, and then he's got some weird stuff coming off his main beam. That's pretty neat, but he lost a lot of inches because that his right side was really strong, like a perfect big 10, you know, like long tines. But he was a really good deer. Very proud of him.
I bet you were. Now, when you said you were you saw some sign. What kind of sign are you looking for when you set up on a early season? Is there any particular stuff that you're honing in on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you always want to look for the natural trails without you putting bait out or anything. That's what I like to look at. Like, see where it's kind of like duck hunting, you know. You can call as great as you want to, or you can set up where you think, but you want to be where the ducks want to be. And the same way with, I think with deer, if you can position yourself in a spot that's already being used without you doing anything to change the environment, you know, that your chances are a whole lot better if you can set up on that position without, you know, spooking the deer coming in. That's a big thing is, you know, how do you get into your spot? How are you leaving your spot? You know, that's a huge thing in bow hunting, without disturbing the deer. But yeah, as far as sign, you know, you're looking like this, like right now, I mean, the acorns are really starting to fall and that's changing the deer's patterns for sure. But yeah, just looking for trails and food sources. And like you and I talked about earlier, the bedding areas, where are they liking to be? Where are they coming from? Where are they heading to when they're leaving here? You know, all those things come into play.
That's right. That's exactly right. I tell you, and that's, you know, you want to be as close as you can, but you don't want to push them, you know, and there's a fine line, man. You know, that's one thing you really have to be cognizant of is, that's, you know, right. You want to get a little closer. You want to get a little closer, but you know, there's a certain time where you have to say, okay, this is, you know, if I get any closer, I may bump him. And
that's right.
You know, there's a lot of opportunity. If you can, the closer you can get, the more your odds are going to increase that you can get that deer. And like you said, in 2004 when you killed
2004.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a whole lot of trail cameras. You know, I remember my first trail camera. That dude was huge. It was almost as big as like a printer, and it was black. Oh, yeah. And I mean, it flashed, and it took like it blinding flashing. But you know, that's all we had. Moultrie put that one out, and then, you know, there were a few more. But man, the trail cameras have really come a long way.
And they really have.
So
yep.
Now tell us about the second one, Dan. That you
Yeah. So the second one was actually. It was actually in 2011, because it was actually 7 years to the day after I was fortunate enough to get that first one. I was in the same spot on the same day 7 years later. And now this deer, of course, you know, 2011, I'm running cameras and I knew all about this deer. He had, but not that much earlier than when the season, I started getting pictures of him there towards the end of September. And, he ended up being 12 scoreable points. He was a mainframe 10 with a couple of kickers off his bases around his brow tine. But yeah, killed him in that same area. Again, he was with another buck. He was actually with a younger 8 point. And, As far as how that hunt goes, I got the pictures of them there towards the end of September. Of course, I was in there because the wind was good those first couple days, and I hunted and I didn't see him, but I kept seeing the 8 point that I was getting pictures of him with, actually, and so I saw him like two different hunts, and I kept thinking, man, he's going to be here. The bigger deer was going to show up, and he didn't. And it get dark, and you know, I'd wait till late and get down. And I remember I had on one of those hunts. When I got down, it's like deer blew out everywhere, and they were blowing at me. And I said, man, it's over. I said, he'll never come in here now. And I was actually talking to a buddy of mine, and Cullen Simmons, and we had lunch, and it was on a Monday, and I'd hunted over the weekend, and he made the comment, we were talking about it. I'm trying to, like, you know how it is when you're after a good deer, it kind of drives you crazy a little bit, you know, a little bit.
Exactly.
But cause that's what you're thinking about. You're trying to scheme and everything. And he said, man, you know, things are about to change with these deer, you know, as far as food sources and then, you know, pre-rut coming on. He said, you better get back in there. Cause I was worried about the wind being just right. And I felt like I needed to let the place rest for a few days. But he made that comment at lunch that day. And so I took off and went, and sure enough, that the 8 point came in, and I heard and kind of saw some movement behind him, and the, the 12 point actually came in and circled behind me, and I got turned and I shot him at seven steps right under me. And it was exciting. He ran 40 yards and I saw him, you know, run off and stand there and fall over. So it was pretty great.
So at what point, Dan, you know, you made a, what you just said is something I've always wondered. What time frame, I guess is what I'm trying to say, do these bucks start breaking up?
Yeah, I would say, I've killed them together with bow hunting up till like around, I remember when I killed a nice deer I killed on October the 12th. But I know, you know, I still hear, you know, during the primitive season, some people still have them running together, you know, good deer, together. But yeah, a lot of them, I mean, it seems like most of the time, from my experience, it is once you get the middle of October, things start changing, and they do break up, you know, a good bit.
Right. So you said that the, you had trail camera photos of this deer. How much has a trail camera, you think, helped us in deer hunting?
Oh man. Well, especially now with the cell cameras, I mean, it has completely changed the game there.
I'm telling you.
Completely changed it right there. Yep. And you know, there's some things I'm like, you know, me being, you know, just, you know, like you are too. I mean, we grew up hunting and we remember that pure, I would say pure, like a pure form of hunting where you just go back to the basics. You keep it simple and you're just out there hunting sign and you kind of, it's not a bad thing, but I kind of like that too, you know. Plus, but now with the cell cameras, I mean, yeah, it's, man, you can learn a lot about those deer and what they're doing with that, and not having to, you know, and even if it's not deer, you know what's going on in the woods, whether a pack of dogs just came through there or there were hogs in there, a bear, and you know more about where I need to be and, you know, what's going on there. Do I need to get, no, I'm not going there. You know, you learn so much, by the cell cameras,
you know, and I'm glad you said that, you know, they're good, you know, but sometimes, man, I can't help but wonder if they give us a little false hope. You know what I'm saying? You know, how many times have you been, like you said, at lunch or around a group of guys and they're like, man, let me show you what I got on camera. And that's almost, it's getting to where like it's almost enough if you get him on camera. And I'm like,
yeah,
just because you got him on camera, man, doesn't mean you're going to get him.
No way. No, there's a big difference between having on camera and actually harvesting the deer.
It
big
is. Difference. Yeah. It's almost to the point to where I'm like, you know what? I don't want him on camera. I don't, you know, just give me a few deer to tease me to go to this stand, because I can't tell you how many deer I've scored that the guy said, I never knew he was there. I never had a trail camera picture of him. He just came out. I mean, I would venture to say it's well over 50%. And it's rare. I'm not going to say rare. It's, you know, a little unusual when the guy says, yeah, I've had him on camera. I tracked him. I knew he was there. I patterned him and I killed him. It's, you know, because once, and you know, just well as I do, once that rut comes in, it's any man's game at that point.
That's right. Yep. But I will say I do like to get a good deer on camera and then just the excitement of that and just having something that, you know, is out there. And then you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I get in the best position that I'll get an opportunity at that deer? I mean, to me, that's, oh man, I love that part.
Yeah, I know. I know you as a young man were like me. You know, your dad would come in there and say, okay, let's get up and let's go hunting, and you're like, oh my god, I don't want to go. It's cold. I don't want to go. You know, we didn't have trail cameras, and another thing is we didn't have doe days to where you could. You know, one walks out on a Saturday, you can shoot it. And we didn't have tags. I mean, well, we had doe days, but we didn't have tags. Yeah. And, you know, it's changed a lot. And now you've got these trail cameras to where, you know, you wake up, your alarm goes off at 4 o'clock and you're like, you know what? It may be the day. And you get up, you make you a cup of coffee, you get your breakfast together, you're fired up, you get out there in the middle of the dark, man, and you're excited to be there. Whereas when I was a kid, it was almost like misery sitting there. You're like, my gosh, why am I even out here? You know?
Yeah.
But these trail cameras, they really do. I think that they've changed hunting, not only for me, but for an entire generation. That
Oh, no doubt.
You know, there's a generation that have no idea how it is to hunt without a trail camera.
Yeah. Yep, a lot of truth to that, for sure.
So let's transition to the third deer, the third best deer that you've got, Dan. Tell me something about that one.
Yeah, with my bow, it wasn't just a straight eight, I actually didn't even get that deer scored. I mean, he's not a what I would call a wall hanger, but a good solid deer. Heavy horn, chocolate horn, but yeah, actually killed that deer it was actually 2020 actually. And it was actually, and I knew all about the deer. Had a lot of pictures of him. It was I think it was around October the 10th, because I remember that because it was Hurricane Delta had just blown through, and I actually didn't have pictures of him for a couple of days. I was worried about that. And then, of course the hurricane came through and it kind of got on through, but it was still like a strong, pretty good west wind. And it was I think it was a Saturday afternoon. And, I went on and that deer came in. I was worried about going because the wind was more west than anything. And he had been coming kind of from the northeast on my cameras. That's where he always came from. So I was worried, but I was like, man, they ought to move, you know, being that this storm's kind of passed through. And, just before probably last 10 minutes of light, had another, you know, again, they're running together. It was a 5-point came in, and he had been there a while actually, but he kept looking back towards the west. And then right that last, you know, last little bit of the evening there, I see this deer. I can see a deer standing. I can see his legs. He isn't in the shooting lanes yet or anything. And then he eases out and I see his main beam and his nose and everything. I said, oh man, that's him. Of course, then even hunting as long as I have, you know, just seeing one, you know, just feel like your heart's going come up in your neck or something. But and I had to watch him for a while, but he was quartered hard towards me, and I kept looking, and I shoot an expandable broadhead, always have, and I was like, I always try to avoid that shoulder, and especially a quarter and two shot. I guess if you get it in front or just behind, you're good. But anyway, he was quartering hard and I kept looking at him. And then I was like, man, I'm going to run out of light. You know, if this keeps on, I'm going to have to make a decision here pretty soon. And, finally he got just a little bit more, he turned just a little bit, and I kind of zeroed in. And, I was like, he was still quartering to me, but I was like, if I can slide it right there, cause he put that leg kind of forward. And I said, if I can tuck it right behind that shoulder, it'll be perfect. And fortunately made a good shot, and he spun and took off out of there, and he didn't go far. And I got him, and I was pretty excited, cause it's been a while since I'd shot a good deer, a good buck with my bow. As I've gotten older, you know, I used to, when I was young and everything, I was so excited about it. Like, I felt like I had to go every opportunity I had. I just had to go. And now I pick and choose when I go. I go when I feel like I put more thought into it and say, okay, I'm going to go when the wind's exactly right, or, you know, conditions are right, or I'm going to pick and choose when I go to increase my odds and not be in and out of there all the time. You know, that's just things like, you know, it's just hunters. We kind of, you know, we change and make modifications over time, I guess.
We do. And you know, the like we were talked about before, the evolution of the hunter. You know, when you first start hunting, you just want to kill one. You know, and yeah. then as you once you get one, then you want to kill everything in the woods. And I remember being in high school, and hey, I hit my limit a lot when I was growing up as a young man. And then finally I started paying attention to the size of the deer that my dad was killing versus the size of the deer that I was killing. I'm like, okay, there's a difference here. And yeah. He was in that stage to where it's, you know, I want to kill a big one. And mm-hmm. finally, you know, as young men do, we've matured into that. And now it's to where with my kids, I'm trying to get them on deer. I know with your nephews. Now, I know Brody goes with you, but does Cooper go with you any?
Oh, yeah. Cooper's been with me.
Okay.
Yeah, sure has.
And that's so cool, man, that you get those young men out there. You know, you've got them fishing. You got them hunting. And I know you'll agree with me when I say this. It's almost just as enjoyable to watch them kill something as it is, you know, anything we could take.
It is. Yeah, Brody and I, we got his first deer. I say we because, you know, it feels like I killed it too, but I know he did it. But it was, you know, it's just exciting. It's for them and you want it so bad for them that everything will work out just right. But we had just a blast. He got him a big doe and we had just a great hunt, and we had to work for it. You know, we had things line up finally like they're supposed to, and he made a good shot. So yeah, it's good to see the kids getting into it and enjoy that. It's just a great sport, and it's a good thing for families, and we get to enjoy God's creation that we've been so blessed with, and you know, it's just a great time.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, you said you shoot an expandable broadhead. You still shooting that NAP Spitfire that Mark Bruce put us on years ago, or have you moved on to something else?
No, I actually shot the Hammerhead.
Okay.
Surely
okay.
You've heard of that, because yeah. he used to shoot that a long time ago, but I think, you know, a lot of people moved on from it, but I have always had good fortune with that rocket broadhead Hammerhead. It's got a 2-inch cut, maybe 2.5. I don't know, but it's bad news. If you get it in their chest cavity, they can't take it.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I like to find out what everybody's using and shooting. And,
mm-hmm.
What kind of bow do you like to shoot?
Man, this is where I get made fun of, but I claim it because it works for me, but I still shoot the original bow I got when I was in 2003. I shoot a Matthews Legacy.
Wow.
I've had it restrung a couple times, and man, it's all I've ever known, and it shoots good. It's a quiet bow.
Is that the old solo cam? Has it got the cam on the bottom?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a solo cam. Yep.
See, that's what Matt, when they first came out, I've got one. I've got an FX, and I bought it in 2003. Mm-hmm. And it's got the solo cam on the bottom. And when I bought it, I also found a t-shirt in there I like, Matthews Solo Cam. So I bought it.
Yeah.
You won't find a Matthews Solo Cam t-shirt anywhere, you know, because now they're just dual cam, or it's, you know, yeah. they'll have wheels. And, you know, that solo cam thing was what Matthews made their brand on. And I like the Matthews. But of course, it's like I tell everybody, if you want to get into bow hunting, go out there and shoot every bow that you can put your hands on, find out what works for you. I'm not going to tell you Matthews is the best. I think they're all great, you know, but
I actually shot one of the, I don't even know the name of it. It was one of the latest Matthews, a few weeks ago, actually with my brother-in-law, I shot his, but not knocking, you know, his bow or anything, but mine. I mean, and I was shooting mine, and then I shot his, and his was faster, of course. But man, mine shot better. You know, it just felt better. I mean, it's just it was me. It was part of me. I was like, there's no way I'm changing.
Exactly no right. Because I've got I've shoot an old 870, a Remington 870 shotgun when we shoot trap or skeet or whatever you want to call it, and Joe Booth, my best friend in the world, one of my best friends, he gifted me a new shotgun. And look, I love that new shotgun. Don't get me wrong. It shoots great, but it's just that old 870. Like you just said, it's like an extension of your body. You know, it's just your shoulder, you throw it up, boom. And with those, with something you're tried and true with, you're comfortable with it, you can throw that legacy up, come to anchor, and you know exactly where your pins are, where everything is.
That's right.
And you feel confident in what you're shooting.
That's, you said it right there, confidence. I mean, what are you confident in? That's what you go with.
Yeah. And I love, you know, I like talking to different people about what they're doing. And, but it's all about what you're most confident in. I mean, it's just, that's just the end of the book right there. If you're not confident in what you're doing, don't even, you're probably not going to be successful. So
that's right. No doubt about it.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you, brother. I know we, it's a little late in the evening, and I appreciate you taking time out to talk to me so we can get this one out. I'm going to work on editing it tonight so we can get it out. You know, I want to get it out before bow season, you know, so
you betcha,
have something
man.
To get fired up on. So, but look, I really appreciate you. And where can people find you in Ruston? What's Shelter Insurance? Where you at in Ruston?
Yeah, my office is actually there on East Georgia Avenue. I'm at 829 East Georgia Avenue, Suite 4 there in Ruston. But yes, sir, I've been there for a while, and yeah, everything's going good. Come see me.
That's right. And if nothing else, go in there and talk deer hunting, man, and fishing.
That's right.
He's pretty good. Hey, and turkey hunting. Anything you want to
talk about all of it.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. All right, Dan. Well, look, man, I appreciate you, brother.
Hey, thank you, Greg. Appreciate you, man.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dan Proofs, man, I appreciate you coming on tonight, letting me talk to you, pick your brain a little bit, and hopefully getting everybody fired up for bow season. So here we are, right on top of October 1st. I hope you guys are out there. Don't forget, buy your tags before you go in the woods. I know I almost got caught like that a couple years ago. I really was on the way to the stand, thought about it, pulled into a gas station, got my tags, and ended up, I believe I killed a doe that year, that morning. So guys, do it the right way. Have fun. Be safe, man. That is the most important thing. Check your gear before you get out there. And always let somebody know where you're going to be hunting so that if something does happen, you know, you can get some help. So this is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. My name is Greg Hicks, and I always want to encourage you guys to live your life past 20 yards. We'll see you next time.